This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have a distinguished guest. Finally, a distinguished guest. His name is Dr. Louis Sullivan. He was the HHS Secretary from 1989 to 93. And so he has a pretty good perspective on a lot of healthcare IT issues. And he's actually a visionary back, 20, 25 years ago. He, for some reason, he saw into the future. He could see what a lot of the problems and issues were. And he actually started the ball rolling to solve some of these problems that we're encountering today. And I thought it'd be a good angle to bring him in the studio and just maybe absorb some of his smarts and absorb some of the knowledge he has to maybe apply it to some areas of healthcare IT that may be important for some listeners today. But before we begin, Dr. Sullivan, I look you up on Wikipedia and I saw the stuff and I nodded my head and I said, I don't know where to start. Why don't you give us a background, maybe a rural background, and you accomplished all this stuff in your life. It's hard to believe.
Well, thank you very much. It's really been very interesting, very challenging, and very fulfilling. I, of course, was trained as a physician, became a hematologist, and ended up as chief of the hematology unit at the Boston City Hospital when, in 1975, my college alma mater, Morehouse in Atlanta, recruited me back to start a medical school. So I went back to Atlanta and was the founding dean of the Morehouse School
of
Medicine.
That's a pretty good notch on the belt, I'd say.
Well, that was really a great opportunity.
Yes.
Not expected, but I was very pleased to have it. And we admitted our first class 3 years later. And that school now is fully accredited, four-year school. And that's how I met then Vice President George H.W. Bush, because he spoke at the dedication of the first building we constructed for the medical school in 1982. We struck up a relationship over the years, and his wife, Barbara, became one of our trustees. So when Vice President Bush was running for president, I supported him because I thought he was a good person, would be very effective, lots of experience. He was elected, and I was lobbying him for one of my trustees who desperately wanted to be Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Oh, I see what happened.
But he turned the tables on me and asked me to be his secretary, and that's how I came to Washington in 1989.
That's another notch on the belt. I mean, these are monumental type accomplishments. I think everyone realizes that. And I think way back then, I was kind of a novice on the internet. I was seeing some things, looking at things. But what you said, you looked at things back in the early 90s, and you really clearly saw some ways to save money and to improve the way business was being transacted, didn't you?
Yes. In 1989, when I started as Secretary of Health and Human Services, we were confronted with the fact that the costs in the healthcare system were rising. They totaled $1 trillion from both public and private sources at the time. The percentage of our gross domestic product that was consumed by the healthcare system had risen to 11% by that time, having been 5.6% when Medicare and Medicaid were enacted in 1965. So it was projected that this would continue to rise. So we wanted ways to improve efficiency as well as the effectiveness of the healthcare system. And with the growth of the electronic systems, we said, this is something that we need to try and introduce in the healthcare system to improve efficiency, to save costs, to reduce medical errors, and to make the system work more effectively.
Now, you know, my kids and your kids would look at you and go, well, Dr. Sullivan, duh, everyone knows that. But if you go back in time 20 years, there were proprietary systems that were battling each other with swords and hand grenades. And everyone, no, you do it my way, A way, do it B way, do it C way. And there were some vicious fights. And for some, you to walk in the middle of, this is like no man's land and saying, hey, let's talk to each other.
Oh, yes. There was clearly the need to develop national standards. And of course, to get away from a paper-based a transactional system, because these were records that were easily lost, misplaced, security issues were there. And we said that why can't we have information really on a card, like a credit card? So that was really the vision that we had at that time, to improve efficiency in the system, to reduce costs, to have better health outcomes, and to reduce medical errors. We thought that it could be done, and so that's why I asked those from the insurance industry to work with us. We had co-chairs, one from Travelers Insurance and one from Blue Cross Blue Shield of America, at that time the nonprofit insurance industry, to work with us to find ways to introduce electronic systems into the healthcare system to address those concerns.
I don't want to stick with this baseball analogy, but this would be like Yankees fans and Boston Red Sox fans all getting together to barbecue. I mean, this is hard to pull off. I mean,
yes. You
know, from our perspective, well, sure, they would talk to each other, but that wasn't style. So you came up with a work group. You thought it might be good to have a neutral corner. Maybe that's what Wheaties is. Maybe that Wheaties is a neutral corner, huh?
Exactly. We put together with them, our two co-chairs, a group of experts in the field, and we really articulated a vision that we needed to improve the system. We needed to improve it for our citizens, for our patients, and for the industry itself. And with that kind of overview, we were able to put together a team that worked to develop recommendations for using electronic systems in the healthcare industry, primarily for administrative things, for billing, scheduling, data collection, et cetera.
So this group is called the Work Group for Electronic Data Interchange, and it's still alive and kicking today. For more information, you can go to WED, as in dog, WEDI.org, and get all kinds of stuff, can't you?
Oh, yes. The report that came out, the preliminary report in 1992, and then the final report in 93, provided a guide for how this system would be developed to improve efficiency and to reduce costs. And what was needed technically in order to do that, having privacy standards, security standards, and data collection standards, and to have a system that really communicated with all parts of the healthcare system. So that was the goal, and those were the recommendations that came out.
You know, it's funny, I was in the lobby waiting for you, and I called the Department of Agriculture, the public relations people, and I said, I want to get someone on the air from the Department of Agriculture. What do you want to talk about? I want to talk about collecting data and what you do once that data is collected. And they said, why would you want to do that? And I said, because a lot of different agencies have this problem with collecting data. I think it's a common problem, and some groups have solved this, some haven't. And I'm trying to get them on the air in January, because it's not limited to just health. I mean, agriculture, commerce. I mean, just about every agency out there has to, guess what, collect data and have to have some type of interoperability, which it was really visionary 20 years ago to see that this was really one key component of solving this problem.
Well, yes, we were really faced with the fact that we were moving from the healthcare system as a cottage industry, where we had growing amounts of information from biomedical research, from public health advances, from technology in the healthcare system, growing population, and growing expenditures. So we really had a system that we needed to have a better way of really having data collected and distributed throughout the system so that this would be used effectively.
I go to HIMSS meetings here, healthcare informatics folks, and a real hot topic is HIPAA. And I think this is in your strike zone as far as interoperability and standards goes. What was your interaction with the HIPAA law?
Oh, yes. Well, the Wheaties report in 93 really provided the background for the development of the HIPAA legislation in 1996, so that this was an outgrowth of those efforts that were started back in 1991. And we're very pleased with how that has developed. We've had a number of advances, but still the system has grown. Plus, and the technology has also grown and has changed. So the reason for the update is to find ways to be sure that the system continues to evolve to meet today's needs, we have a good basis, but we need to be careful that we use the innovations effectively that have developed since that time.
I don't want to step on the punchline here, but the punchline is, hey, 1993 was 20 years ago, and on December 5th of 2013, there's going to be a press release down at the National Press Club, and Dr. Sullivan's going to be there, and he's going to be talking about, well, let's bring us up to date, what's going on here, and what I'd like to do is maybe take a break, and we come back, talk more about, circle your calendars for December 5th, and come on down and get a free doctor's visit at the National Press Club, and we can talk about what's happened in the last 20 years, and maybe what's going to happen the next 20 years from a visionary. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Dr. Louis Sullivan. He's a previous HHS secretary from 89 to 93. Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Louis Sullivan. He's a previous HHS secretary from 1989 to 93. No, he's not doing a house call on my knee. He's talking about the past 20 years ago and the future. And it's, in the break here, I said, well, maybe, doctor, this is like Back to the Future and McFly and all that stuff. But, you know, if you think what happened 20 years ago and you had a plan, maybe it's about time to update the plan. And that's what he's going to be doing here on December 5th. Down at the National Press Club right on 14th Street there. There's going to be a big press conference, and lots of people have gotten together, and they're going to come up with the 2013 report. And I don't want you to, spoiler alert, not to spoil what's going to happen, but tell us what's going to happen on December 1st, please, doctor.
Oh, yes. On the 5th, we will be unveiling report to bring it up to date on the pathway for use of electronic systems in the healthcare system to improve efficiency, to continue to reduce costs, and to have the system become more effective. We will be identifying some of the bottlenecks that are in the system now with recommendations for strategies to address those, as well as continued innovations that will lower costs and reduce medical errors. So this really is to bring the system up to date with the technology developments that have occurred over the last 20 years, such as smartphones, which didn't exist at the time, and mobile technology. So this is what we will be doing when we release the updated report on the current goals for the electronic basis for communications in the healthcare system.
Now, Dr. Sullivan didn't sit in his vacation cabin with a dog and write this in the back of an envelope. You know, he got to go with a lot of people. In fact, he's the chair of the Executive Steering Committee. He's got lots of folks who have all kinds of bright ideas, and he's kind of like the filter. He's kind of like my wife. He's going to say, that's a bad idea. and what you're kind of like the filter, and what you're going to do is represent. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of people who've worked on this committee to come up with, you know, what plan should come next as far as interoperability goes.
Oh, yes. We were really very fortunate in having our executive committee with IT specialists, with people from the insurance industry, from other areas in business, working with hundreds more giving advice and recommendations. So that really will strengthen the report that we'll be releasing on December 5th, giving strategies for how we build on what has occurred. By the way, I mentioned that in 1993, we were spending $1 trillion in our healthcare system. Well, as of just a year or so ago, we were spending almost $2.5 trillion. So the system has grown remarkably. We have new kinds of therapies and new ways of delivering care. We have new kinds of health professionals years ago, health was primarily the province of doctors and nurses and dentists. Now we have physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, nurse midwives. In dentistry, we have dental hygienists who are doing more. And we have a revolution that's underway in the health system, not only in the kinds of therapies that we can provide, but the kinds of professionals in the system. This is because of the tremendous innovations in healthcare. But what we need to do is to be sure that our system that supports the transfer of information really is able to keep up and support that system, to have it work efficiently, as well as to provide information on time, where it's needed, in a cost-effective manner. So the new report will encompass all of those areas.
You know, when I was a young man back in the 1960s, I'd go on trips to Boston, and I'd get these big paper maps out, and I'd try to figure out where I was going. I used a highlighter, and I'd always get lost. And what I needed was kind of a roadmap. And this is really what it is. I mean, this isn't Dr. Sullivan pounding down on the table saying, this is how you're going to do it. Everyone's going to do this or do that. What you're doing is saying, look, from my vast experience and from 100, 200 key people, this is the direction I think we should go with electronic health records. This is the direction we should go with interoperability standards. I think this is a very mature and reasonable approach rather than a dictatorial approach, I think.
Oh, yes, yes. To have a system that's going to work effectively and efficiently, we need the input of those who are using the system every day, who have the technical skills, who have the analytical approaches. So this effort really is a broad-based effort where we have been fortunate to get the talent and the interests of those who are healthcare professionals, those who are financial and economic professionals, those who are engineers. So all of these come together to give us the kind of system that will work today. Our population has grown. We have new kinds of information. When I was secretary, back in 91, we announced the launch of the Human Genome Project. And that project was to really do research to decipher the makeup of the human genetic structure. Well, that's been done. We have a lot of information now, and we're talking about personalized medicine, that is, medicine that is more specific for the individual based upon their own genetic makeup. So those kinds of changes in the biology in medicine really need to be supported by a stronger electronic information infrastructure so that we can utilize all this information and have it available when it's needed by the health professional and by the patient.
I have to wax frivolous here. I met Francis Collins once, the guy who ran the Genome Project, and he had a guitar. He was singing and had a guitar. And so here we got this crazy thing of doctors and music crossing over again. It just seems so, it's incredible. But this Francis Collins guy, I mean, he's probably one of your peers, I can honestly say that. He's accomplished a whole lot in so many different areas. And during the break, yes, we were talking about musicians and physicians and doctors and voices and medical school, and all things are coming together in this interview. I think it's fascinating.
Well, it's a great analogy. You think about it, it's not so far-fetched, because to be a successful musician, you have to be able to count, to measure, to be precise, as well as to be nuanced, to know the difference between very soft or very loud music, and really to bring out the true value there. Well, in medicine as well as in the other sciences, you have to have both the basic knowledge, but you also have to understand the subtle differences between one biological phenomenon and another. So that's the level of detail and discrimination and sensitivity that we need in the system. So the WEDI report that will be released on December 5th really gives us a foundation that will guide the development of the system over the next 20 years. So we've been pleased with what has happened during the past 20 years, but we know that there's still lots to do. There are also concerns of maintaining privacy and security in the system. Those technical aspects of it will be addressed as well.
I just want to reinforce what happened. Dr. Sullivan just said WEDI. It's WEDI, and it is the organization he founded. And you can get more information at WEDI.org. And you can find out all about the December 5th release of information on maybe the next 20 years. And maybe this isn't cast in stone. Maybe this is a roadmap for the next 20 years take something like electronic health records. And what are the best practices for electronic health records? And where do electronic health records fit in this whole world of interoperability? I would think, I'm not going to steal your thunder, it would have to be part of this announcement December 5th, I would think, huh?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The need for technology to support the system has never been greater, because the volume of data that we have. And the need for precision and accuracy has never been greater. So having a system that's capable of handling vast amount of information and delivering it where it's needed on time, that's really what we need. And involving patients themselves as well as health professionals. Health professionals talking, exchanging information with each other, but also having our patients or users of the system also participating in the system, both to make it more efficient as well as to reduce costs.
We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about healthcare IT interoperability, the whole idea behind electronic data interchange, some of the origins back in 93, and then we're going to bring you up to date for an event taking place on December 5th, and it's going to be released, focusing on maybe a half a dozen different concepts or ideas, and maybe in the next block we'll explore some of those concepts in more detail. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Dr. Louis Sullivan, previous HHS secretary from 1989 to 93.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the world-famous Dr. Louis Sullivan, previous HHS secretary from 89 to 93, and that's just one notch on his belt, founder of a medical school. He's involved in many, many projects, both inside the United States, outside the United States. You can go to Wikipedia, type in his name, and be dazzled, but we'd rather have him dazzle you in the studio here this afternoon. You know, there are some of my listeners who are young, and they read blogs, and they may read my blog. If you want to find my blog, you just type in John Gilroy blog. Do you read any blogs? Do you participate in any blogs at all, Doctor?
Yes, I have one that is www.pemsm.com.
Uh-huh.
That really... gives you an idea of all of the things that we're involved in, both here in the United States as well as abroad. The ones abroad are primarily countries in Africa, South Africa.
Well, what's this, Brian? I don't want to tease this anymore. I mean, tell us about this initiative. This is a big deal, too.
Well, the South African involvement was the formation of an organization called Medical Education for South African Blacks back in 1985. Which came into existence to provide scholarship dollars for black health profession students in South Africa. The universities in the early 80s were opening up to blacks, where they previously had not been admitted. But with a lot of the universities opening up, scholarship support was not available. So the blacks in South Africa were generally poor, and therefore being admitted to a university really was meaningless for so many of them if there was no scholarship support. So this organization came into being, started by Herb and Joy Kaiser. Herb Kaiser had been in the U.S. Foreign Service for his career, and he retired in 1983. One of his postings was in South Africa, and he saw the different experience that blacks had with the health system, which was usually not a very good experience, if they had any access to it at all. Whereas for whites in South Africa, they really had a system that was very, very good system. So it meant there were two different worlds. This organization really existed from 1985 until 2008. I became chairman after my tenure as Secretary of Health and Human Services. But that organization, during its years, provided support for more than 10,000 students in South Africa in the health professions, medicine, nursing, dentistry, veterinary medicine, and otherwise. So it really was...
I keep thinking of the biblical admonition, teach them to fish. It's like, no, they can fish.
Oh,
I get it,
was
teach them to fish, and you walk away.
Right. Yes, exactly. So this was really an effort to help roll back apartheid, provide opportunities for blacks in that country to become health professionals, to help develop political and social stability in the country, so that there would be the services needed by the population. Through the Morehouse School of Medicine, we had projects in various countries in Africa addressing HIV/AIDS because of the epidemic there, of course, that we have had here in this country as well. So of the 54 countries in Africa, I think I've been to 30 of them, not all with where we have programs, but really understanding things that are going on. And looking forward, the World Health Organization is focusing on improving health in the African countries or on the African continent. So that's been one of the things I've been involved in. We're right now talking with officials in the country of Liberia, where they're thinking of developing a new medical school. And if they decide to go forward with it, we might be working with them to help in that effort.
Yeah, that's probably a lifetime career objective for one human. that would be me. I'd maybe reach for that, but not accomplish it. Yeah. On December 5th at the National Press Club, you're going to be releasing a lot of information about a report coming up in the next 20 years. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag here, but in general, we can talk about basic general concepts here. And most healthcare IT professionals I speak to, whether they're physician assistants, nurses, whether they're doctors, the end of the rainbow is patient engagement. They say, John, put everything, who cares? Patient engagement. If we can engage a patient, we're going to win.
Absolutely. The 21st century, health and care in the 21st century is going to involve the patient in a much more active way as the center of the enterprise, as opposed to the previous more or less authoritarian relationship between the doctor and the patient or the nurse and the patient, et cetera. The patient really will be at the center and will be an active participant in the system. So the report that we will be releasing on December 5th really will be focusing on five overarching themes. First is distinguishing the utility of healthcare information that's derived from the data in the system. Second, we'll really emphasize the need for patient identification standards to facilitate greater consumer responsibility for his or her healthcare information, as well as improved health outcomes. The third focus of the report will be the need for greater education of consumers on healthcare processes and the importance of healthcare information and greater literacy in using electronic healthcare applications. The fourth area of focus in the report will be identifying how mobile and smart technology impacts healthcare exchange processes. And finally, the focus will be on the need to better align administrative healthcare information, that is scheduling, billing, et cetera, but aligning that kind of information with clinical healthcare information, especially in the age of the electronic health record. So this will be the five overarching themes in the report that will be released on December 5th.
And the themes kind of blend real well with the areas of interest. And those areas probably start with patient engagement and move from there. And how can you talk about patient engagement without talking about electronic health records? It fits right in there.
Absolutely. As you know, the disease profile that Americans are afflicted by has changed dramatically in the 20th century. The beginning of the 20th century, conditions such as tuberculosis, smallpox, malaria, pneumonia, and other infectious diseases were quite common, high infant mortality, maternal mortality rates. Fortunately, due to public health advances and medical advances during the 20th century, those conditions really are much less common, much less of a problem. We're living longer today as a result of advances in public health and medicine. But we now have the emergence of chronic diseases. Life expectancy for an infant born in 1900, for example, is 47 years. Life expectancy for an infant born today in the early years of the 21st century is approaching 80 years. So we now have things such as heart disease, stroke, cancer, other conditions that we have to address. To effectively address those, we have to have our citizens or our patients themselves working to help maintain their health. Their lifestyles have to do affect them. We have conditions such as diabetes and obesity that have a number of consequences for them. So the patient really is more at the center of everything that is done in the health system now than was the case 100 years ago. So that's why having good data systems, the electronic systems for information exchange and collection and analysis, that's really what we hope to accomplish over the next 20 years.
And it's probably going to tie into something with unique individual identifiers. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, right. Congress really did not, in the legislation, in the HIPAA legislation, did not permit that. That is a bottleneck that needs to be addressed. We surely understand and support the need for privacy and security, but we have to have a system that really will identify the patient. We believe that that can be accomplished while maintaining security and privacy in the system.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about innovative encounters and some aspects of healthcare IT that maybe you not have thought of, for example, payment models. I mean, this is the administrative part and the clinical part. They both have to be balanced in order to reduce cost and improve outcomes. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio is Dr. Louis Sullivan, previous HHS secretary from 89 to 93, and a man of many accomplishments since then. Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Louis Sullivan, previous HHS secretary from 89 to 93. In his spare time, he founds medical schools and goes to Africa and founds more medical schools and does all kinds of different things. What we're talking about today is an idea he had 20 years ago to maybe get different parts of the healthcare IT industry to talk to each other and maybe agree on standard and common ways to exchange information. Back then, it was kind of a kooky thought, but looking backward now, you say, well, that was the whole key to interoperability that we're seeking today. And we've gone through a lot of aspects. One thing we mentioned earlier was on December 5th, there's going to be a big report released, and you can get more details at WEDI, W-E-D as in dog, I, W-E-D-I.org, and find out more information about interoperability and electronic information exchange and all kinds of words like data harmonization and interoperability and big three- and four-syllable words. You can impress someone. But you can impress my audience, Dr. Sullivan, if you have a Twitter handle. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. Are you on Twitter?
I see. That's an area that I yet to grow into that.
Well, so. I finally be on something. It's like 100 topics, and I finally picked one. Wow. I'm going to stop here.
All right.
if you want to follow me, I'm at Ray Gilray. And just a lot of people get information in different ways. Some people are listening to you and going, this guy's been involved in technology for decades. I wonder if he's really a card-carrying nerd or not. Is he a nerd wannabe? Is he a potential cool guy, or is he a nerd? And so I have put together a scientific 10-question test that everyone has to take, and I am going to ask these questions right now and find out where you rank.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
If I show up at your house this afternoon, how many desktops will I see floating around your house?
Right. You'll see two.
Two.
Right.
Okay. How many cell phones have you purchased for your use in the last year?
Well, I've had one purchase. I upgraded to an iPhone 5.
Okay. Okay. So that, in the game.
Right.
And you know you don't have a Twitter feed. Do you have your own blog?
Well, no, that's an area that I do send out a blog, but I have...
I know one thing. You got a radio voice. I'm listening to that voice going, they're going to kick me out. I'm going to give you my job. That radio voice is killing me. I am out of here. I have my walking papers in about 10 minutes if they listen to this interview. We'll have to have Jimmy erase it. Jimmy, erase this interview. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Right. Well, I have a technician who really works with me, you know, on that. So on that, I'm really not doing it myself.
But what kind of smartphone do you have, doctor?
Oh, yeah, it's iPhone, I guess it's 5S.
Yeah, good, yeah, good. And in a typical month, how many apps do you use on that smartphone?
I frankly don't use as many as I thought, but I would say perhaps 9 or 10, ranging from calling a limo, you know, with... you know, the Uber app, which is great.
Oh, you're up to speed. That's a lot of points. That gets a lot of points in this show. Good.
Right. I have to admit that most of my use, of course, is in sending a text message or using the iPhone, et cetera.
Or keeping up with the Kardashians. Huh? Sounds like something you'd be doing.
That's right.
Okay, break into your house this afternoon. How many tablet devices am I going to find floating around there?
You'll find two. I have, iPad 2.
Okay. Good, good. Right. And how many social networking sites do you participate in?
Again, my technician is helping me get into the 21st century on that.
Blows negative 10 points. Finally, the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Paper.
Boy, you're a cool guy. You're close, though.
I'm a creature of habit in that I frankly enjoy holding paper in my hand.
I personally can't wait till I get Doris Kearns Godwin's latest book about Teddy Roosevelt in my hands here. Maybe that'll be my Christmas present, but I do too.
Yes, right.
It's an emotional attachment to it, you know?
Right. But the actual book was one that's the title of the book is Seeing Patients, to show just how fascinated I am. Although I've been in medicine all of my life, I still find this an area that I'm always learning. Book was by Dr. Augustus White, orthopedic surgeon at Harvard, who established the orthopedic program at the Beth Israel Hospital there. And Gus is perhaps 1 or 2 years younger than I am, but we are roughly in the same age. I grew up in Georgia. He grew up in Tennessee. And I was struck by the similarity of our experiences over life because I went to Boston University Medical School because when I graduated from Morehouse College, I couldn't go to medical school in Georgia. Interesting because 21 years later, I went back to Atlanta, and the Civil Rights Revolution had changed things so dramatically that that really provided the environment where I was able to start medical school. And I had the support and interest not only of the black community and the black physicians, but the white community and the white physicians as well. Gus White... my friend who wrote the book Seeing Patients also went to New England to prep school but for the same similar reasons, became an outstanding orthopedic surgeon and an authority on the spine and is one of the leading figures. So that kind of biography mixed in with medicine and the parallelisms in our careers has fascinated me.
So you're reading a book called Seeing Patients. And my wife wants me to read a book called Seeking Patience. I'm an impatient person.
Right.
Two different aspects. Huh?
Oh, yes.
We're two different sides of the coin here.
But I also mentioned that I was pleased that I actually wrote a history of the Morehouse School of Medicine.
Another notch in the belt. Okay.
That was called The Morehouse Mystique that Johns Hopkins University Press published. So it talks about the factors that led to the development of the medical school, which I find interesting, because developing an institution has its own unique challenges. And finally, for you and your readers, next February, I'll be releasing from the University of Georgia Press my autobiography that's called Breaking Ground, that talks about the changes in medicine as I experienced them personally throughout the course of my life. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with the public, because I think we've had tremendous developments in medicine in terms of science, but also in the sociology of medicine, how medicine fits into the society in general, how medicine is influenced by societal mores, and also how medicine in turn influences society, debates on privacy, et cetera. So,
what month next year?
That's February 1st. It'll
February
be released.
1st. Good. Right. When you go on your tour, let me know. I can place you in several places that might be good for selling books.
Fine.
Well, you know, this is a sports studio. They do hockey out of here. And I told you in the break they had some magic eight ball they used to throw at each other in here. And I normally hand people a physical eight ball. I'm going to hand you a figurative eight ball and say, okay, doctor, you've been a doctor. You've seen a lot of different things. Well, where's healthcare going to head in the next 5 to 8 years? Is everyone going to be wearing Fitbits and the doctor's going to be remote somewhere and monitoring me? Or where are we heading?
Well, I think we're heading in the direction of greater power for our patients. The patient is really going to be at the center of things. For example, in the Weedy Report, we'll emphasize the fact that one of the ways we can reduce costs, improve care, and have care more accessible is by using electronic systems for patients to communicate with their health professionals. Will really reduce the need for in-person visits, et cetera. But the patient will be an active participant in his or her care, very different from what it was like in the early part of the 20th century. So we will see much more of that. But I maintain that with all of our electronic and technical developments, there's still the social side of the health enterprise that is important itself. So there'll be communication, but we'll have to learn how to use our technology to the maximum advantage while we maintain the humanistic qualities in medicine, because that brings a value that it contributes to the healing process, and it helps with the bond of trust between the health professional, the doctor, the nurse, the dentist, et cetera, between the health professional and the patient. Compliance, understanding, all of those are improved by that. So we are heading, I think, for tremendous achievements in medicine with the technology that's available to us. That'll also enable us to continue to have the humanistic qualities in medicine that are so important.
For more information, go to wedi.org, get white papers, learn about the event on December 5th. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Louise Sullivan, previous HHS secretary from 89 to 93 and man of many accomplishments. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.